This is a Stimulus Network podcast.
Welcome to Inside the Petri Dish, the podcast that puts science under the microscope. In this episode, George Cook, wildlife and bird expert, helps us explore the wildlife and species in our gardens and local areas.
People tend to be more disconnected than ever from nature. If you are more connected to nature, you tend to be happier, and you're also more likely to take action to look after nature and wildlife as well. So if we can teach people about wildlife and get them outside doing bird watching, they're potentially going to feel more connected to nature, they're going to feel happier, and then they're going to be more likely to do things like put up bird boxes or recycle or cycle to work. My name's George. I currently am working for a wildlife charity as a communications officer. So I get to talk about wildlife and nature and conservation in different formats, mostly online, blogs, newsletters, social media. But historically, my career so far has been involved in teaching and public engagement. So that's been the majority of my career recently. It has been talking to people, getting people to understand why nature and wildlife is important, get them interested in it and understand the value that these things can have in people's lives, and hopefully try and inspire people to take action to look after wildlife as well. In my free time, I'm a big bird fan, like to start bird watching, like to take my camera out, do a bit of wildlife photography, hopefully use some of that photography to bring into my work and use those photos to teach people and inspire people to look after wildlife. I do think it's really important to engage people with the wildlife that they're most likely to see. Obviously, all these BBC programmes, David Attenborough recently, at least in his Wild Isles show, but before that, tends to be the wildlife shows that you see on television, or lions, or hyenas, or rainforests. And that's all very great and exciting, but I think it's more powerful if you can teach people about the wildlife that they might see on their walk to school or when they're out in the park. Just like learning the difference between a jay and a magpie, or a song thrush and a missile thrush. I think by giving people those sort of skills that they can apply when they're outside, out on a walk, like I said, it helps build that connection to nature and their local area. And I think that is what is missing. Unfortunately, people tend to be more disconnected than ever from nature. I think knowledge like your local garden birds or local wildlife isn't taught in schools, and people can grow up and quite easily not know these things, which I think historically people would know there are different species of trees and their birds. So I think that's why it's like important to try and get that nature connection and like the outcome of that. I think the University of Derby have done a lot of research on nature connection and what that means, and like the value it can have to your life by being more connected to nature. And they've shown that if you are more connected to nature, you tend to be happier, which is like a good outcome. And you're also more likely to take action to look after nature and wildlife as well. So if we can teach people about wildlife and get them outside doing bird watching, they're potentially going to feel more connected to nature, they're going to feel happier, and then they're going to be more likely to do things like put up bird boxes or recycle or cycle to work, or all these little behaviours that we all need to be doing to tackle these big problems. And if you want to get more involved with bird watching, what I would do, I would tell people, is to go sit in your garden or to your park. Maybe take some binoculars and a bird book with you if you have those. But if you don't, just have a little look around, see what birds you can see. And you don't need to identify it, but maybe just like make some mental notes about what those birds look like. So you'd be like, oh, it's about the size of a robin, it's this colour, it's on the floor, it seems to be feeding this sort of way. Make some notes of that, and then when you get home, you can go on the RSPB website or look in your bird book and just start by identifying that bird that you've seen, and you can slowly build it up from there. And what you can do now, there's all sorts of great apps where you can try and take photos of the birds you've seen, and then log them on these apps, and that will actually record that bird as like an official wildlife recording. And I think that's quite a nice feeling as well, because then it's like I'm learning a new skill and I'm also looking after these animals by contributing data to their conservation. You can get lots of different birds in your garden, depending on where you live or, sort of surrounding habitats to your garden. When I teach people bird identification, I normally assume that people can identify a robin and a magpie. So hopefully everyone can picture what those two birds look like. And I tend to use those for like size comparisons as well. So if I say a bird's about the size of a robin, picture that, or about the size of a magpie. So common garden birds, I don't actually have a garden at the moment, which isn't that great, but in my old garden, two of the most common birds I'd get in my garden were grey tits and blue tits. And on a nice sunny day, you'll be able to see blue tits. They do have that bluey-green colour, but one of the best ID features that I teach for blue tits is they actually have a black line through their eyes. So it looks like they're wearing like a little Van Dyck mask. So if you can see that, and sometimes you can see that, even when they're in the shadows of the trees, you can see they've got lines through their eyes. That's a good tip, that's a blue tip. And the grey tits, they tend to have more of a black cap, like a little hat they're wearing, and they also have a big black stripe down their chest. On a male in particular, that's really wide. So that can, those two little features, I think, are quite good at trying to separate those two common bird species that you might see in your garden. And also, grey tits, I think, have the easiest bird song to learn. So that's one that sounds like a squeaky wheelbarrow being pushed along. So again, people tend to pick that one up quite easy. Another garden bird that I think people can overlook is the wren. And that's actually the most common bird in the UK. And when I tell people that, they're always, don't believe me to start with. They always think it's going to be one of the gulls or a pigeon. And that's because wrens, they live their life almost a bit more like a mouse. They're tiny little brown balls. They'll scurry around in the undergrowth in your hedge. So you can easily overlook them. But if you sit out in your garden and you just be real quiet, just have a little look around, they are common birds. And sometimes you do see these little brown balls popping around underneath the hedge. So that's a good one to look out for. Wood pigeons are common, but I think tends to be people don't tend to realize that there's two types of pigeon. Wood pigeons, they have the white patch on their neck and also white patches on their wings. Someone, I remember that, W for wood pigeon and W for white. That's a nice little tip. This one as well, because it gets overlooked as well, there's a dunnock, sometimes called the hedge sparrow. So a dunnock, it's about the same size as a robin, and people do get confused with house sparrows, but a dunnock tends to be browny grey colour, a bit more of a grey head, and their eyes are actually brown, but they're actually quite a common bird that you might see in your garden, so just look out for that one. Yeah, so non-bird species in your garden. You mentioned a couple, like where I get, where I'm at the moment, we do get a lot of foxes. So pretty much most nights I'll see a fox outside my flat. We have a lot of foxes in our area. And I'm also quite lucky in that there's a few badger sets near me as well. And I can see badgers quite regularly if I go out and I go to where I know they are. Hedgehogs, and unfortunately hedgehogs, are one of those animals that we're losing really quickly. I'm not sure about the exact stats, I think we've lost half our hedgehogs since the year 2000. So, I mean, and I've also heard someone say before that it's like we're losing hedgehogs faster than we're losing tigers in the wild. So, unfortunately, hedgehogs are now quite rare. If you're lucky, you might have hedgehogs in your area. And my auntie, she puts out a little bit of food each night. She has three hedgehogs come onto our patio most evenings. Whereas here in Bristol, I've lived here maybe 6 years, and I think I've seen a single hedgehog in that time. So that's a shame. And a hedgehog is one of those charismatic, beloved animals on children's TV shows. And that was that little advert of them teaching me how to sit across the road when I was growing up. So it's a shame that we're losing that animal that is like so beloved. That's a real shame. In my old garden, I used to get a couple of rats for my bird feeder. Not everyone's cup of tea, but I would always be like, you know what, they're part of the great circle of life as well. They're not coming into my house. I'm quite happy with them. And we'd also get some mice as well in the garden. But this time of year, in the summer, my favourite non-bird group of animals to look for are butterflies. So there's the big butterfly count going on at the moment as well. So that's this citizen science project where they want people to sit out 15 minutes and record the butterflies that they see. And again, that's really important information. And birds do tend to go a bit quieter in the summer as well. So I think a lot of bird watchers in the summer months tend to transition over to something else, a bit like dragonflies or butterflies, something to scratch that wildlife itch when the birds are a bit quieter. My favourite species in the UK, it does change quite a lot, especially my favourite birds. But my all-time favourite bird is the swift. So it's actually only a UK species for maybe 3 or 4 months of the year. It only migrates here from Africa for the summer. But they're a fab bird because they're like the kings of the skies, really. A lot of birds, well, most birds can fly, but they all tend to live some of their life on the ground, whereas swifts are flying for 10 months of the year. They only ever land to have chicks. So that's just a cool fact in itself. I mean, I think why I like watching birds is because when you see them flying, it makes it look so fun and easy, and you're a bit like, oh, I wish I was doing that. Whereas when you watch a swift, that is just to the extreme. They're flying around with all their mates screaming their heads off. It just makes it look fun. So they're definitely my favourite. Other birds I like, probably a barn owl. And again, I think owls, again, have that air of mystery and magic and wisdom. So when you're watching those birds, it just feel like you're connecting with something a bit, yeah, magic and special. I've been lucky enough to have some nice encounters with barn owls right here in Bristol, just a couple miles out of the city. Everyone can support local wildlife in lots of different ways. Some of them are easier or cheaper than others, but everyone can do something to look after wildlife, and we do need everyone to get involved. It's better if everyone's doing a little bit than if just someone has an incredible wildlife garden. If everyone's just doing a little bit, that's how we can halt these declines in wildlife. And some of the things I think are best are really easy. So if you're lucky enough to have a garden, just leaving a little bit of it completely alone. So if you've got a corner or behind the shed or somewhere that you don't need that much, just don't touch it for a season of spring or summer. Let the grass grow long, and that's going to be a habitat for all sorts of insects, and mammals might nest in there. Birds will use that material to nest. So just let a bit just go wild, and it's quite exciting just to see what comes up. Also, you can do things like planting certain flowers and plants in your garden that will benefit bees. And even if you don't have a garden, like I don't have a garden at the moment, but I've got a fair few pots out by my car parking spot that are full of wildflower seeds and borage, and it's nice to see the insects and the spiders and the bees coming to use those flowers. So things like that are really important. Another big thing to do if you've got the space and the time is to put a pond in your garden. And sometimes I think people are a bit put off by that. That seems like quite a bit of work, but it doesn't need to be something that you dig out with a spade or anything like that. You can maybe just dig a hole and stick a bucket in the ground, let it fill with rainwater, put a few stones and things in the bottom and stuff, and climb out, and just be amazed at what finds that pond quite quickly. And we've done that before, and frogs and things have found those ponds really, really quick, and that's quite a rewarding thing to do. Another simple thing you can do is to stop using pesticides. I always get really wound up when I go into a garden centre and right next to all the bee hotels and the pollinator-friendly plants, there's then suddenly all these chemicals and poisons that you're encouraged to spray on your lawn. You don't need to use those. Even if they're aimed at a certain type of pest, they're not targeted chemicals. You spray that on your lawn, it's going to kill whatever's in there. So that's like a really easy thing to do. just stop buying them. And other ways you could support local wildlife is, I know near me, most of the local parks near me have like a volunteer group or a friends of group, and they can be really nice, meeting people who also like wildlife and learn new skills and learn a lot about local wildlife and get involved with helping out your local area and improving those wildlife. Like I mentioned with birds, you can start recording what you see in your wildlife as well. So those apps, again, my favourite is iNaturalist. You take a photo of something and the app will work out what it is you've seen. So great for things like flowers and trees when things can't fly or crawl away. But it's good for insects as well. And it will log that as a wildlife recording. So get out in your garden, go on a little bit of a hunt, see what you can find. And then that's quite a good way of seeing if your improvements are helping. You could do that for, I don't know, 20 minutes at the start of the season, do a lot of work to improve your garden for wildlife, and then at the end go out and see how many you can see and see if you're making a difference. It's like quite a sad thought to think about a world without these creatures in it. I think it's just a sadder place to live. Even if we could survive separate from the natural world and we didn't need to rely on it for all our food and water and resources, like, as far as we know, but for now at least, we are the only planet in the universe that can harbour life, and we have all these different varieties of animals and species that you couldn't even imagine, and they're real. The aliens are real. We share the planet with them, and I think to lose those and for society not to care that we're losing them is really sad. So I think that's what drives me, really. I want to see these creatures myself and enjoy looking at them, but I also want other people to appreciate how exciting and interesting these animals are and how important they are as well. So we're learning all the time about how if we restore nature, that's not only going to be good for our own well-being, but it's going to help combat climate change as well. So, you know, pull more carbon out of the air, areas that have more biodiversity, do that better, so we can restore nature and beat climate change at the same time.